Hello and welcome to Automators, the podcast where we talk about grabbing your technology and encouraging it to do your bidding for you. I'm Rosemary Orchard and joined as always by my pal and co-host David Sparks. Hey David, how are you today?
I'm great, Rose. I'm really happy to be talking to you, and we also have a guest today.
Welcome back, Simon Stovering.
Hi. Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to join you again. I think this is the second or third time. I think it's the third time, actually, that I'm here. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's always lovely to have you back as you have created so many useful apps for automation. And of course, you know, you've been experimenting with all the new awesome technology and hardware that's out there. I've seen so many screenshots of you experimenting with things on the Vision Pro recently that it's, you know, and you've been playing with RuneStone and getting that over there as well. And I'm just, very happy to have you back, as is David.
Yeah, so for folks who don't know Simon, and he's been on the show before, but he's one of our favorite developer slash automators because Simon really does address, you know, automation with respect to the applications he builds. He actually addresses automation problems. You know, I use DataJar so often, Simon, and DataJar, which Rose and I have talked about many times on the show, is the app that lets you save global variables for shortcuts, super easy. And Simon saw that was missing and just added it. But he's also the force behind RuneStone, Scriptable, JSON. You know, so you've made a bunch of apps that are what I call automation adjacent. You know, these are apps that a lot of developers use, but also this stuff is very handy for like automators who want to kind of take it to the next level.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess it is. I tend to think about it in as developer tools more than automation tools, right? But I guess those two tend to go kind of hand in hand because if you do any automation, you're also kind of doing some development, I guess. Like you're developing an automation after all.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, but it's not really development. But it really is because it is taking blocks of logic and putting them together. And whether you are writing that or, you know, physically putting things together with, you know, your fabulous marble and Meccano machine to do whatever it is or, you know, anything else. At the end of the day, it is development work of a kind. So, yeah, it is a development tool and an automation tool all in one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess even the simplest automation is some development, right? If you just set up a keyboard shortcut, that's like if this happens, then do this. I mean, that's sort of development, right?
Yes, it absolutely is. And it's always, you know, fun to see how you can make these things better, which is, you know, one of the reasons why you have so many apps, I think, because you've been creating all of these and, you know, it's not just that you've created them and just left them there. You know, they get updated when things break or there's something new to add as well. And, you know, it feels like you're constantly experimenting with things as well, which, you know, could potentially lead us to new features down the road.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is very kind of you to say, because I mean, honestly, I haven't been updating some of them as much as I'd like to. But, you know, as you said, there are, I mean, a handful of apps these days, and I'm only one person with this many hours in the day, right? So I can't work on everything in parallel. So I'm doing my best to keep the things or the apps sort of updated whenever needed. But I also tend to shift my focus a bit between them.
Well, I think this is one of the things that, you know, allows you to do what you do as well as you do, because, you know, you have these indie apps that you've developed. You know, you've got DataJar, you've got Scriptable, you've got RuneStone. You also have a full-time job. But at least for me, I find, you know, it's one of those things where you've got a huge problem, right? And you solve it whilst you're washing the dishes, because that's just like, that's the thing that has allowed your brain to focus on something else just enough that it's gone, and now I have the solution to the problem. And I feel like, I mean, I'm making massive assumptions here. I feel like one of the reasons why we have so many, you know, useful apps from you that work as well as they do is because you have the others. So you go off and you do something and you experiment with Vision Pro, for example, and 3D models and things like that. And then because your brain's off busy experimenting with that, you know, it gives it the opportunity to stumble across a new idea which, you know, can, you know, result in something fabulous and awesome, even if it's just, you know, a little example thing, you know, that's the sort of thing that will then inspire other people.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think that's right. And many of the apps are kind of, that's this synergy between them somehow, right? Because I think one of my first apps, or one of the first apps in this space, at least, was Scriptable. And that kind of spawned JSON, the JSON Viewer app, because that was originally a feature of Scriptable. And then I saw that this could kind of turn into its own app. And the same thing goes with Runestone, my text editor. Scriptable has a text editor, but then I needed a better text editor, so that spawned Runestone. So it is like, you know, as you said, you might be working on one thing, and then that kind of spawns the idea to the next thing. And I think one of the benefits with this is both, I kind of enjoy working on different things, solving different problems, but I think it also kind of just, as an indie developer, keeps you from getting burned out. I think there are people who can just, you know, focus on one thing for years and find joy in that. But I kind of like to switch gears now and then. So I might be working on Runestone for a long period of time. And whenever I kind of get bored of that, of starting to feel, you know, a little burned out from that, I can shift gears and focus on something else. And then come back to it later, right?
Yes, yes. Is that how we ended up with Retoot, which is re:TOOT for anybody searching in the app stores, an app that lets you quote posts from Mastodon. And of course, it has shortcut support. Of course it does.
It does.
But this is, you know, it's a little free app that you just put together and threw it on the app store. How did you come up with that idea?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess that is sort of how that came to be. I never thought of it in that context. But yeah, that was when Mastodon was getting traction for, I guess, for the second time, when there was like this second wave of people leaving Twitter, right? A couple of years back. And then Mastodon really started getting traction again. And this was, as I remember it, that was over the holidays sometime in December. And I'd been working a lot on, I guess, Runestone back then, and kind of just, I wanted to do something else. And then I was quite frustrated that Mastodon didn't have quote posts. I know there are all sorts of different opinions on quote posts, whether they're good or not. I have to say, I quite like them. I think they're a great way of reposting something with your own thoughts. And I was frustrated that wasn't possible on Mastodon. And I thought, I mean, I could sort of solve this problem just by taking a screenshot of a post and then kind of making that look somewhat nice as an image. And then you just share that with your own thoughts, including a link to the original post. I was like, that was an idea that I thought I could do in, I think back then I thought I could do it in, you know, a couple of evenings, but then reality hits and it takes way longer than you expect. So kind of ended up doing it in a couple of weeks, I think. Yeah, so that was just, you know, to shift gears a bit, because I've been working on Runestone for a long time, but also to kind of solve a problem that I was facing myself.
And I feel like this is, you know, some of the best automations come, or automation solutions that you can offer to the world, come from having your own problems and solving them. You know, whenever somebody asks me, you know, like, how would you do this? I can think, well, in theory, I would do that. But when you're actually, you know, trying to solve the problem yourself, and you actually start going through the processes, that's where you find the flaws and so on. And, you know, one of the things I really love about Retoot in particular is the fact that it, you know, you're generating a nice image of the post on Mastodon that you want to share, but you've also added alternative text to it for people using screen readers and so on, so that you can still, you know, actually read the text as text, which is, you know, that's the sort of level of thought that actually, you know, comes from really using this sort of thing instead of just, you know, well, you know, it kind of mostly does what it's supposed to do, and it works for most people, I guess. But then, you know, then you end up with a better solution because, you know, you're actually genuinely using it. And I think this is the thing that excites me about Runestone as well. And, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know how I feel about the Vision Pro, as I've never, beyond theoretically, because I've never got to use one. I know David's got one. I know you're lucky enough to have access to one at work, which obviously is shared between other people, but I've never tried it. But when the thing that's making me excited about it is the fact that there are genuine apps, not games or fun little, you know, experience things. You know, obviously there's the sort of Jurassic Park experience that, you know, all of the journalists talked about that you can try. But there are actual apps that can be used for work and productivity on this. And, you know, RuneStone is one of those. So, you know, and, you know, it's simultaneously not an automation app, but it also is an automation app because I feel like being able to write text in, you know, an app that actually has all the features like line numbers and syntax highlighting and so on. So if you are writing, you know, some, you know, for example, JavaScript, then you can see that, then that makes this better. But I'm guessing you didn't have access to a Vision Pro during the development phase of this.
I did not. No, I did not. I did attend one of the labs that Apple had during the winter. So I did have a chance to try RuneStone on the Apple Vision Pro.
Well, I mean, developing for a platform you never used before is a challenge. But one of the things you've also done, and one of the reasons why I want to talk to you with the Automator's audience, is because I feel like you, Simon, are, in my mind, one of the better developers about supporting automation. Like, we were just talking about, you did a free app in your free time that you made no money in, but you took the time to add shortcut support. And I think for people who are automation enthusiasts but not developers, that's a bit of a black box for us. Like, we don't really understand what's involved for you putting that support in there, just like the old days with Apple Script support and Mac apps. It's like, could you tell us a little bit about the considerations you give when you decide to add automation? Like, what types of automation do you think makes sense, and what's involved with creating that?
I think for me, it really comes down to figuring out what's the core functionality of this app. Like, what's the top one, two, maybe three things that people want to do with this app? And then making sure that basically to this day and age, making sure that they can do it through shortcuts. I mean, back in the days, it was we would do this through UL schemes, right? And some apps still offer that, and some people still use it. But I think the best way to today is enabling people to automate things through shortcuts. So you can just pinpoint the top one to three things that your app does, and make sure that that's available for people to automate. Because then you kind of take your app from, you know, living in isolation somehow, and then kind of making it available in a broader ecosystem that people can then build on top of to create things that you didn't think of. Just as an example, I know some writers use Retweet, the app for quote posting Mastodon posts, but these writers actually use it for creating embeds of Mastodon posts for their blogs. Now, I haven't looked into this. I would have guessed there was a better way to embed a Mastodon post in a blog, but I mean, apparently there isn't. So they're just embedding screenshots. And I never thought of that. But these people use it for it. And what I hear is that people use it or create these posts or these images of the posts through shortcuts then. And that's a use case I never thought of. But apparently, I mean, if it works, then I'm happy. Yeah. So what was the question again? I feel like I diverted.
I feel like you also, you know, made a really good point of, you know, you're considering the bigger picture. It's not just, you know, somebody's life and workflow doesn't just revolve around your app, but also how your app interacts with other things and other apps, you know, and ecosystems and so on. I feel like that is a really good approach to looking at, you know, the development side of things, but also from automation. You know, it's not just what am I doing in this tiny little corner by itself, but what is, you know, the bigger picture of this? And so I feel like that's a really good lesson for everybody to take from that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, to your second point as to what goes into this, I think for the most part, if you're only creating fairly simple shortcut actions as a developer, so meaning that their functionality that you provide to users is, you know, kind of isolated and somewhat straightforward as it is with Retweet. It's just like taking in a URL and creating an image. I mean, as a developer, that's kind of straightforward. Then not a lot goes into it. And I can reuse a lot of my code from the kind of the main app. And I can reuse that in the shortcuts action. that's somewhat straightforward. But I think I cannot really mention this without saying that I think a couple of years ago, I basically declared Shortcuts bankruptcy on Twitter, saying I don't want to build Shortcuts apps anymore. And part of me kind of still feels that way, because as a couple of years ago, this system was quite broken for developers. And every summer it just broke, and our Shortcuts, broke in new and unexpected ways. And we had to, you know, do hot fixes to make sure that existing functionality still worked when the major or minor version of iOS was released. But I think since I posted that a couple of years ago, I don't remember exactly when it was, but I mean, probably 2 years ago by now, things have become, have improved. In Shortcuts, it has become more stable. I've also changed a bit in the sense that I try to build simpler Shortcuts actions. Yeah, it's basically back to the point that back then, 2 years ago, I was really, I feel like I was trying to push the envelope here with what Shortcuts actions could do in terms of specifically scriptable, running JavaScript inside these Shortcuts actions. And that just kind of kept breaking. And kind of the same with DataJar, because it's trying to do a lot of synchronization of your data when you're running a Shortcuts action. So there's actually a lot of things going on behind the scenes there, whereas the Shortcuts actions that I've built into Reachroot are way more straightforward. And as a result, I think they're way more stable than the actions that I shipped earlier. I guess my point is that I want to say that it has kind of been a hassle up until now, building Shortcuts actions, but I think it has become better. And if you're building straightforward actions, it's not that bad, really. And I don't want to discourage any developers from doing it, because it's also quite fun.
I think Apple's heard that as well. There's been, various new ways to create Shortcuts actions. And it's like, okay, but that way is not compatible with this way. And if you do it that old way, then you don't have this feature and so on and so forth. But they are, they are listening and making it easier for developers. And on top of that, they've added functionality. Like, for example, if one app developer has, say, for example, you've got, scriptable, if you release scriptable too, because it would be under the same App Store account, if you use the same identifiers for the Shortcuts, then anybody that installs RuneStone 2 and uninstalls anybody that installed scriptable 2 and uninstalls scriptable 1, assuming that you put the same actions in or use the same identifier, those Shortcut actions will continue to work. And I feel like this is the sort of thing which, had to come with time. And it wasn't there from the start and made things a lot more painful for developers, but it has definitely made it easier and better as time has gone on, which is good. So, they're listening to the feedback from folks like yourself going, this is painful and it shouldn't be like this. And why does it always break? And things are getting better. I know this year I had very few Shortcuts that completely and utterly broke. I recently finally got to the bottom of, I had a Shortcut running at 9 o'clock in the morning, and only this Shortcut would insist on opening apps as it did things. And I tried, if I ran it manually, it didn't do it. I eventually narrowed it down to, it was using a different run Shortcut action to the current run Shortcut action. But it was still working. It was just, it was taking text as an input instead of a variable, and everything, and that just somehow caused everything to break. I did file feedback with Apple with the original broken Shortcut and everything, but I now have a working automation that does not randomly go off and open 16 different apps as it updates a bunch of stuff in the mornings, which is a huge improvement. But things like that make it difficult for developers to find what the problem is, but also difficult for users to know, what the heck have I done wrong here? But it is getting better over time, fortunately.
Yeah, I can imagine that's been quite a hassle to debug that. What you're saying actually, that makes perfect sense, because 2 years ago, the technology we use as developers to build these Shortcuts actions have changed dramatically. And that just, slipped my mind in my previous rant, I guess. But the technology has become so much better. And just to point out one thing, previously or originally when we were building Shortcuts actions, our actions would run in a separate process. And that would be encouraged by Apple. They were like, this is the way to do it because it's way faster. But that has changed. Apple has changed their mind, it seems, because the actions that we build now run in the same process as the main app, which, without getting into like too nitty-gritty, but it just makes things way simpler for us as developers.
Yeah, it's like if you add an action to a to-do list, then, you know, if you had a to-do list application, then you'd immediately be able to like get all of the things, all of the items in the to-do list, and that would be in them instead of it kind of sitting on the side waiting for the app to, you know, pop up and actually pick it up and do the rest of the work with it. It's not kind of sitting in a separate little side area off screen. You know, it's backstage. It's waiting for its turn on stage, but it won't get there until the main process runs.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as a consequence of this, I haven't actually tested that myself, but it occurs to me now that I would guess that third-party actions have also become way more stable, especially as long as you keep the app running in the background, so the action doesn't have to kind of start the app. I haven't actually tested that. It's just like, I guess. And that would make them way more stable.
Yeah. In my experience, you know, especially like the bigger actions that you've, that you would want to run that, you know, require, you know, doing a lot of things with data, you know, like running a script and so on in various apps, they work much better now. And I'm seeing a lot fewer apps have to force you to open their app to run the action. Which was always the telltale giveaway before, that it needed access to the main process because there wasn't enough memory or it didn't have access to the right data. So it always had to open the app to run the action. And a lot of that over time has disappeared and gone away, which, you know, is better for me as a shortcuts user, but that's also great for you as a developer because it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, definitely.
This episode of The Automators is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Go to linkedin.com/automators today to find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free today. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Hiring is difficult. You have to find people with not only the right skills, but the right attitudes. Doing this on your own is nearly impossible, but if you get the right tools, it's a lot easier, and the right tools are LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. It has a vast network of more than 1 billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn also knows that small business managers are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. That's why they're constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. It's easy to see why 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. So post your job today for free at linkedin.com/automators. Once again, that is linkedin.com/automators to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for supporting the Automators podcast. Simon, one of the things that's changed since we had you on last is Shortcuts came to the Mac, and now Shortcuts is sort of in Vision OS. And you know, Shortcuts is no longer the iPhone and iPad automation tool. It's really Apple's looking at it as a universal automation tool to be used across all their devices. Does that go into your calculus as to whether you include it? And what does that add to your work if you say, I'm going to need to make this work on a Mac as well? I guess you really don't have an app. Well, I guess maybe Runestone? I don't know. Have you been supporting Mac Shortcuts with some of your apps?
I use DataJar and JSON on my Mac all the time because it's a great way to share data around all of my devices in a lovely little database. And JSON is just great for viewing JSON files, of course.
Yeah, so there are those two, DataJar and JSON. And it's so long ago that I built those actions that I'm just kind of trying to think what actually went into it. But both JSON and DataJar are Mac Catalyst apps, so they're not, you know, fully native Swift UI apps or AppKit apps. And basically, very little work went into the shortcut sections to kind of port those from the iPhone to the iPad. A lot of work went into other parts of the app to make it feel more Mac-like. Yeah, and I think that's especially true with the new App Intents shortcuts. I think they're like way easier to port between the different platforms because everything's just kind of in code. There's very little setup around the shortcut sections. But I haven't actually thought about this. It's a great question, David. I think the answer is that nothing really goes into, or very little goes into, porting actions between the platforms.
I think the exception to this that I've heard of is when you've got something related to HomeKit things, because HomeKit is special and doesn't work the same way. But yeah, once you've created a shortcuts action, the fact that you can just use that same thing because it's code now is so great to hear. Because I know previously it was kind of like a configuration file where you had to, you know, it was a kind of pretty-ish UI, not great, on a configuration file. And that just always... That never felt right to me, as you know, somebody who wanted to go off and play with this stuff and somebody who theoretically should technically be capable of it. I always kind of just ran into that and went, what the heck is that? So yeah, it's good to hear that the code approach makes it easier for you as well.
Yeah, I think it does. It's a good point. I guess there could be some frameworks where if your shortcut sections happens to use any of those, then you might need to do some more work. I don't really know. I've never dabbled with HomeKit. It's still one of the things that I hope to do one day, just because I'm curious to see how it actually works.
Well, you know, and another question that comes to my mind from your comments in the earlier segment was about making easier or simpler shortcuts or shortcuts actions. And I think you're really onto something. I mean, I think if you look at the shortcuts arc, Apple's goal with this, I think, is to make very simple actions with the idea that people will make shortcuts that are, you know, between 2 and 10 steps that solves a few small problems for them. And, you know, when you look at this, like, we've all been in this in the long game. I remember some very advanced Apple scripts we would write in the old days to try and make the stuff do a lot on the Mac. And it feels to me like they aren't even really aiming for that with shortcuts. I think Apple's vision of this is that people who don't write software for a living, but just want to glue a couple apps together or just make it a little easier to get some data in, want to do something. And they can, you know, learn this language very quickly because it's modular, you know, Lego-like nature. And they want you to make shortcut actions. And I think they almost want developers to make, you know, rather than make very complex actions, I think they would ideally like to see you make like 10 very simple things that you can, you know, yank out of your tool rather than one very complex thing. Do you get the same impression from the developer side?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
You did say earlier, Simon, you know, they were encouraging things to run in a separate process, which was, you know, incredibly limited. So I feel like that was, you know, definitely them attempting to signal, you know, that these things should be very, you know, small and, you know, independent of other things. But at the same time, the fact that they've now kind of pivoted on that and said, well, actually, no, you can run this in your app. It's not running as its own little mini, you know, extract from the app. You know, that's definitely, you know, a change that has been made to try and, you know, that, you know, offers you the option of doing, you know, whatever it is that, you know, is the most appropriate for the action and the app, I suppose.
I guess that kind of means that it's up to the developer more to figure out, like, which direction do I want to go in, do I want to build, like, teeny tiny actions and provide teeny tiny building blocks that your users can then put together, or do you want to write like a bigger action that solves a series of that performs a series of operations that could otherwise have been split into separate actions? It just occurs to me that along this topic, I think occasionally I get a couple of requests every month that writers say to add shortcuts actions to Runestone because it doesn't actually have any shortcuts actions. But that's because it's basically a text editor and the Shortcuts app already has the actions needed to, you know, open a text file in an app that supports that, so people can go and edit their files in their favorite apps, right? And that's one of the requests I'm getting, like, oh, why doesn't Runestone support this and that action? Because I want to build a flow that, you know, appends a text to a document and then opens it in Runestone or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but you already have these teeny tiny building blocks in Shortcuts that you can put together to achieve this same thing. And I don't really want to build actions that just replicate that. My only motivation for doing that would be to make it easier to discover that this is possible, you know, with Runestone. To kind of make my own actions that, I don't know, append something to a document or opens a file in Runestone or something like that. But that's not really the strategy I want to take. I don't want to re-implement things that already exists in Shortcuts and can be built using tinier building blocks. So instead, basically what I've done is just, you know, send a reply to people kind of asking me for these actions that details the actions, the Shortcuts actions they would need to achieve the same thing.
Yeah. And like, for instance, like when you look at the way Apple Notes to me is like a bit of guidance, right? Apple Notes has a ton of little atomic actions like find note, open note, you know, create note, very simple things. And I feel like this is one that Apple has actually paid attention to as opposed to reminders, which is, I think, kind of behind. But you see the shortcut support there, and it's these small actions. And it makes me wonder, I mean, now this is pure speculation territory. We've all heard rumors that Apple is pursuing AI somehow in relation to Shortcuts, maybe this year at WWC, maybe next year. But I think they're really, one of the goals of their AI initiative would be to simplify the on-ramp to automation, to say, hey, can you, you know, use your voice to give your device an instruction and have it do something for you. And I think the on-ramp for that is the small atomic Shortcuts actions. Like if they could be smart enough to take a voice command and assemble something for you. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Maybe I'm just dreaming, but I'm such an automation enthusiast. I think it would be really interesting to see if we could do very simple automation. And in order to do that, I think they need the building blocks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's a great point that if you want to put some AI on top of this, it's probably better there that you have small building blocks that it can put together as it sees fit. And I think you're totally onto something that this could and probably should happen, that you just, you mentioned that it should be voice-based, but I think this would work great as, you know, that you just provide a text input. You just kind of as if it was you know, one of these popular image generators or ChatGPT or whatever. You just kind of write which shortcut you want, what you want it to do in a sentence or two, and then it generates it for you. Actually, the other day I was looking into if anyone had built this on top of Shortcuts already, because I was kind of surprised that I haven't heard anything about it. But it seems like no one have kind of tackled that yet. I'm not entirely sure why. I think, I don't know if the Shortcuts format had been locked down even more than last time I looked into it. Because I seem to remember there was this tool, I don't recall what it was called, but there was this tool that could take JavaScript and turn it into a shortcut.
Jellycuts.
Do you remember its name? Jellycuts, that's it. So I'm guessing in theory, if that's possible, then you could write some AI thingy that takes text or voice and turns it into a shortcut or creates a shortcut from it.
Well, and that seems to be what Ari's working on, you know, the granddaddy of Shortcuts who's left Apple and formed a new company based on the news articles I've read. It's like he's thinking about that, but I would imagine Apple has to be thinking about that internally too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they have.
Yeah, I mean, there was something in the news this week as we're recording about how Apple's shareholders want to force Apple to tell them what they're going to be doing with AI. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like, they've got a really long list. They're just not ready to share it yet because, of course, they're trying out all of these things. And I feel like actually to an extent with some of the recent Shortcuts developments that they have made, you know, they're kind of getting there because we have this new section inside of Shortcuts. If you go to the folders area where it's called App Shortcuts, and these are, you know, things that are created by apps that just sort of pop up and appear, and you can actually enable those to appear in Siri. They automatically appear in Spotlight, at least for me, but you can also enable those to appear in Siri. And I feel like this is a nice sort of halfway point where we're not yet necessarily ready to fully unleash an AI on us, because you know, if you ask an AI what's the best way to prepare for a pool party, or the fastest way to prepare for a pool party, it recommends buying an industrial shredder and a lot of plastic water bottles and setting up the industrial shredder the wrong way around. So it'll shred the plastic water bottles and let the water go into the pool and the plastic off elsewhere. That's, you know, that's not a great way to prepare for a pool party. And that's the sort of responses that you get back from AI at this point in time, which, you know, AI is great for some things, and other things, you know, it'll tell you things that are just completely and utterly factually incorrect. And so I feel like allowing developers to pop up and make suggestions, they moved away from Shortcuts actions only appearing when a user did an action repeatedly, which was such a terrible way of doing things. I understand why they thought it was a good idea, but it was a bad idea because, you know, there are so many people that, you know, finally download the app that's got Shortcut support. Yay! Oh, now I have to go and open this file 15 times so that it can suggest an action and hopefully it'll pop up in Shortcuts. You know, that the actions can just be there from the get-go now. That's an improvement. But, you know, allowing apps to just say, hey, I've made these actions for you. Like, these are probably the things that you want to do quickly. You know, like Keynote has the option to create a new presentation. Notes in this action, it's, you know, got the option of making a new note or a quick note or accessing some of my recent, frequently accessed things, you know, and other third-party apps are in here too. You know, they're trying to bring that stuff to us, you know, and I was just thinking as you were talking, Simon, you know, because, you know, you can append to a text file using Shortcuts. It's under the documents section of actions, and you can open a file using Shortcuts. What would be really nice for Runestone is if basically you could say, hey, I want these native Shortcuts actions to appear under my own app, as in these work with my app. And then if somebody taps the open file action from the Runestone section, it pre-populates the application name. But other than that, it's the same thing. That would be really nice because that would allow you to take advantage of, you know, what the operating system is already offering and give users what they want. Plus, you know, it encourages people to use Shortcuts, and it also means that if Apple has to update that, well, the work's on them, not on you. And I feel like allowing developers to say, hey, these actions also work with my app would be a really nice way of, you know, getting the ball rolling there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a great idea. I never thought about that, but that totally makes sense. I mean, I could see Runestone show a bunch of text-related actions there. And I guess one of the ways that developers are getting around this today is having some developers are having a tab in their app saying usually Shortcuts, and then have a list of, you know, pre-made Shortcuts that users can then add to their Shortcuts library using, you know, one of these iCloud share links. So developers will just kind of go in and create Shortcuts that perform some workflow that they believe their users will, or many of the users will want, and then they just put it in their app through an iCloud share link. And that's one way of surfacing, you know, other actions that go well with your Shortcuts actions as a developer. But it's really not great for discovery from a user point of view, right? You would probably want these to live in the Shortcuts app.
Yeah, exactly. So if you could, you know, at least, you know, reference in some way, you know, other actions, you know, if you've got actions that would work between, say, scriptable and JSON, for example, you know, then being able to reference that action from scriptable in the JSON section and vice versa, you know, obviously that would have to come under some kind of, you know, limitation of this is from the same developer, so they can do that. But if you are two totally different developers, maybe not yet. You know, that's something that would probably need, you know, more thought. But it would be really nice if you could do something like that. And, you know, hopefully that will make it better. Because I was looking and I was trying to think, you know, what actions might I want for Runestone, and potentially opening it with specific with a specific theme, because I'm opening a JavaScript file, and with JavaScript files I like this theme, but with Markdown files I prefer that theme. But at the same time, that's also potentially just something that could be added as a setting to the app. And is that going to be better for people than a shortcuts action? I don't know. It's, you know, you'd have to do some kind of study to find that out. But yeah, I think you're taking the smart approach of not just dumping out a whole bunch of shortcuts actions, which then you have to maintain and support and keep around. Even if, you know, they've only got four people using them, they'll get very cranky if you try and take them away, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's a fun example of a shortcuts action I could build into Runestone. And I have like other ideas along those lines and have, you know, heard different ideas during its lifetime, but it just kind of keep coming back to, yeah, that's a great idea, but is it something people actually want to use, or is their target audience way too little for me to maintain this shortcuts action? And along the same lines, when the focus modes were introduced, was it last year or the year before? I don't remember, but I was like, I really wanted to do something with them, so I just brainstormed ideas. And back then I was working, you know, day and night on Runestone, so I wanted to bring it into a Runestone context, and it just, I really struggled to come up with something that I believe people really wanted to use. And one of my best examples was the same as yours here, Rosemary, with, you know, switching the theme in the text editor to match your focus mode. But then I thought, well, in the end, I think people really just want something for light mode and dark mode. And the app already respects that. So you can set a theme for, yeah, one for light mode and one for dark mode. So I don't think you're going to want a different theme for working. Or, I mean, one use case I could see is if people use it a lot for writing, or if they use it for both writing Markdown and some programming language, then they might have like a writing focus mode, and then it would turn into a specific theme in their app, and they might have a coding focus mode, and then it'll choose another theme. I don't know.
Except for people who are interested in that, really, you don't need to support it. There's an action that when Runestone launches, enter the writing focus mode. I mean, it's not something that, one of the beauties of the focus mode triggers is you don't need to support it. It's already there if people want it, you know?
Yeah.
And for things like changing themes and so on, realistically, you know, most people just pick one thing that they're happy with and that's it. Like, you know, the closest thing I can think of is, you know, where you want different syntax highlighting for different files. And therefore, this theme works better with that just because the colors stand out more. So there's better contrast for, you know, visibility purposes or similar. But that, yeah, at the same time, that doesn't necessarily feel like something that should be solved with automation outside of the app. That feels like, if anything, that's a feature to add inside of the app and not a reason to add shortcut support. Being careful about what automation options you actually offer, and then as a user, inversely, being careful about what, you know, be careful what you wish for, right? It's the thing with the monkey's paw and three wishes. I wish for three more wishes. It never works out the way you're hoping for. You have to kind of think through what are the steps that I'm actually hoping to achieve here, and why do I think that this is the way to solve it? You know, that's always a good question to be asking yourself.
Although I will say, like, Fantastical gives you a high degree of control over the look and settings of the application via shortcuts. And I like to have, like, there's a quarterly view that I do when I'm doing planning. There's a daily view when I'm working through the day. And I've coded those shortcuts into many of my other shortcuts where, you know, I can get the calendar to do exactly what I want and create the exact right environment for the calendar, depending on the type of work I need to do with the calendar. And I find that very easy with shortcuts. I've taught a lot of people how to do it in the Max Berkey Labs and on the internet. And there's a lot of people that rely on that. I think for a coding environment, probably you've got a type of user that's not as likely to want to go down the shortcuts rabbit hole. But I think for a lot of apps, getting a setup in the app via shortcuts is can be very beneficial to automation minded users.
You've definitely kind of made me think that maybe I should reconsider whether it makes sense to add a couple of shortcuts actions to Runestone. I guess there could be some use cases.
That's the downside of coming on the Automators podcast, I think, as a developer, is we're going to bully you into features and automation that we want you to put in the app. But
encourage. Gently encourage. But yeah. I mean, I think the difference between something like Runestone and, say, DevonThink is DevonThink, you have a database where you put all of your data and so on. So it's very logical in DevonThink that you could have a work database, any personal database, and maybe even a travel database or something like that, and you want different ones. But Runestone, it doesn't have files and so on stored in it. You have files on your device and you can access them and edit them using Runestone. And I think that this is, you know, the different approach and why or why not you may want lots and lots of shortcut supports and so on, because the data itself doesn't live in Runestone. Runestone is merely a window for that data that you can choose to use, the same way that you could choose to use Textastic. Mm-hmm. I can't pronounce it, but it's one of the ones that you credited actually on the repo for the Runestone framework, which is another app that I love. I use both Runestone and Textastic on a regular basis. And I flip between the two depending on what it is I'm doing and why it is I'm doing it like that, because they offer me different approaches to solving the same problem, but sometimes one approach works better for my brain than another approach. And I feel like that is the difference between some apps. You know, some apps contain data and some apps are access to data. And the ones where it's access to data, it's, you know, it's much more difficult to, you know, sit down and immediately come up with 48 different shortcut action ideas because, well, if you can access that data using the native things through the app, then why wouldn't you do that? So yeah, it's an interesting question of, you know, what shortcuts actions should an app have? Because yeah, as you said before, you know, you can do it natively with the shortcuts actions there.
This episode of Automators is brought to you by Vitaly. Customer success teams today are facing a problem. How do they connect customer data back to their work? Vitaly changes that. It's a new kind of customer success platform, an all-in-one collaborative workspace that combines your customer data with all the capabilities you expect from today's project management and work platforms. Because it's designed for today's customer success team, that's why Vitaly operates with unparalleled efficiency, improves net revenue retention, and delivers best-in-class customer experiences. It's the solution to helping your customer success team keep a better pulse on your customers, which maximizes productivity, visibility, and collaboration. You can boost your bottom line by driving more revenue per customer with Vitaly. And if you take a qualified demo of Vitaly, get a free pair of AirPods Pro. So if you're a customer success decision maker actively seeking CS solutions, working at a B2B software as a service company with 50 to 1,000 employees, and you're willing to explore changing customer success platforms if you already have one in place, schedule your call by visiting vitaly.io/automators and get that free pair of AirPods Pro. That's vitaly.io/automators for a free pair of AirPods Pro when you schedule a qualified meeting. Our thanks to Vitaly for their support of this show and Relay FM.
So Simon, we've been talking to you about app development and shortcuts long enough. What are you automating these days? I know as a developer, I guess there are some limits as to what you can do. You can't like have it write Xcode for you, although I think Apple would like to be able to tell you they could, right? Isn't that the other big AI improvement we might see at some point where it starts writing code for you? But what are you using for automation these days? What are you doing?
Yeah, so I mean, a couple of things, but I think the first one I'd like to highlight is actually, I don't know if that one's too boring because it's not something that's available to anyone but me yet. But I've been building this app in my spare time called Text Correct right now. It's a horrible name. I hope to come up with something better. Speaking of AI, it's using OpenAI's APIs to correct a text. So it's sort of like you send it a text and then you get back a corrected version of that text using OpenAI's APIs. So it's sort of like, you know, Grammarly, but built on OpenAI and way simpler than Grammarly. even though it's an app that I haven't released yet, and I'm actually not sure if I will release it, but maybe, I want to mention it because I think other people can find other means to build it today as well. And I've been using it several times a day. So basically what it does is when you have the original text that you want corrected and the corrected version of the text, I do a diff. So this is kind of where my enthusiasm for building developer tools comes into play again.
Sure.
Because I do a diff between the two texts, and then I show, what's been changed in the text. So before sure. I accept using the corrected version, I can actually validate that the version that the AI gave me is something that I want to post or I want to send in an email. So I kind of show everything, all the words that it has inserted, I show with a green background, and all of the things that it has deleted from my original text, I show with a red background. So I can kind of see the changes and validate that this is sane. Because I feel like that's the thing with AI, right? That sometimes it just does something that you don't understand. So you don't want to just trust it blindly, I think.
No, I agree. And like, I've been toying with that. I feel like one of the areas of AI that should be of interest to automators is text in general. Like the Whisper engine is really good at doing transcription, but then developers are applying AI grammar checking to that dictation after it's captured. And so you talk into the device and something comes out that isn't even necessarily the exact words you said, but it's a usable version. Like I did a test in the Max Sparky Labs, and I have this terrible habit of saying gonna instead of going to when I dictate. And it was interesting because some of the engines will do a literal translation and they'll write gonna, and others you can see where AI is getting involved and it changes it to going to, which is not what I said, but it is what I meant to say. And it's a very interesting idea that AI can actually get your intention into the document, but it's also AI and not entirely trustworthy either. So I'm glad that you are applying some thought to this, because I feel like you're the exact kind of developer I would like to see come up with tools that apply this stuff that would do a diff and like give us a way to use this stuff intelligently and not blindly.
Yeah, sure. But I think the example you're coming up with there with gonna and going to is quite interesting, because it's unclear to me which of the two you would actually prefer, because going to might be correct, but if the AI translates it to going to, it also loses some personality here, right? Because, I mean, you're David, you're saying gonna, and that's just the way it is. So what would you actually prefer here, David?
Well, in my case, if it's words that are going to be published somewhere, I don't want the word gonna ever to be published,
All right.
But it's just I think maybe it's a Southern California thing we do. You know how every little area has their funny way they say words. Somebody was telling me recently that I say mountains wrong, and I didn't know that. I guess nobody else pronounces mountains the way we do in Southern California. It's just a weird quirk of the culture.
Correct to me.
Yeah. See, there we go. See, Rose, I'm going to put you on my list of people that support me on this. But it is interesting because we're in this very new period where text processing is something that's very manageable with AI tools. The automation tools are just starting to show up, like the one you're playing with. And I just think we're kind of on the verge of something very interesting with all of this. Like, what if you could have automation where, it does the application in the clipboard as opposed to doing a diff? There's a lot of angles to this. And I think as automators, we should all be curious about it, but also have opinions about what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
I like the idea of using this as essentially a sort of customizable, contextually aware autocorrect for dictation as well. You've got text correct as an idea. I've linked folks to a post that you made on Mastodon and some replies with some little example screenshots showing how it works and what it does. And I feel like this is the sort of thing where you could actually in the app, and I'm not giving you homework here because I am fully aware of what level of difficulty this is, but you could have essentially different profiles. So is David dictating for a text to his wife, or is he dictating for a blog post? Because those will have two, you know, different voices. I'm guessing David wouldn't mind if Gunnar makes it into a text to his wife, but he doesn't want it in something for a blog post. So being able to specifically, you know, look for things like that with a, you know, a focus on, you know, removing, you know, localized contractions or something like that. I'm trying to think of what the technical term for this would be. But, you know, it's a regional variant, you know, removing regionalisms from your speech. And equally, somebody who is not a native speaker, if they are, you know, writing, you know, a personnel review or something in English, because that's the language of their company, but their native language isn't English, having, you know, having something help them that is aware that they are writing, you know, something that is, you know, quite official and is going to be reviewed by multiple people. So you don't want ambiguity, but also it needs to be aware of, you know, their native language and, you know, things that, you know, would, you know, make it through. There's, I can't think of one off the top of my head now, but there's, oh yeah, isolation. This is a word that I often see specifically Germanic speakers using, and they actually mean insulation, because isolation is the word that for the stuff that you put like in the walls to help keep your house warm. But in English, isolation means to be isolated, as in to be alone from everyone else. It's still a word, but it is not the same word. And so having something be aware of things like that and, you know, make suggestions is, you know, that's definitely a possible future for AI and things like that, which can help with, you know, everybody using language. You know, I've been using some AI things at work recently to help me reply to emails and making sure they get the right level of, you know, formality in them without the typos and the spelling mistakes and so on. Training it to use all of the internal names that we've got for things, though, that has been a fun ball game. It's exciting to see what possibilities, you know, we have coming towards us. And I do hope that TextCorrect makes it to the App Store. I know you don't like the name, but I feel like the name is very effective. And honestly, the little app icon, you know, I've only seen like the mini version of it in Shortcuts, in the Shortcut screenshots, but I quite like it, to be honest. You know, it's my inner nerd just getting really happy that there's some red highlighting and some green highlighting on letters, which to me explains exactly what the diff action does. And I feel like that's really cool. So I'm hoping that this will actually be released on the App Store at some point so that I can buy it and grab a subscription and use it, because that's, you know, that's what I really want from this.
All right. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much. Well, I guess that means the app kind of fits the target audience, because it is like, you know, made by a developer kind of for developers or for like-minded people, I guess, to kind of take autocorrect or take some of what we know from the developer world and apply it to autocorrect, basically, and then with sprinkling some AI out on it. I'm glad to hear that. That you can kind of see yourself in those ideas, but yeah, I mean the name is I don't really like it. That's just the first thing that popped into my head when I had to create the Xcode project, right? I mean, I had to type something, then I just went with it. Yeah, but we'll see if I ever make it, if it ever makes it to the App Store.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could always call it QWERTY, you know, the first six letters across the top of an English-speaking keyboard. I will not disclose at this point in time how many files and projects and various folders I have named QWERTY or QWERTY UI or something like that, because it's probably too many. But, you know, I'm sure you'll come up with a name at some point that fits. But as it is, you know, I think the idea for the app is really cool. And this is the sort of thing where Shortcuts actions make perfect sense, right? Because you're integrating the app into the workflow that you probably already have. You know, maybe you've already written the text in Drafts or RuneStone into a file or something, and then you just want to run this over it as an extra thing and confirm what it is that you're doing before you update the original. And that's where Shortcuts really, you know, will fit in for something like that. Or equally, if you just want to write something and then send it off somewhere else, you could start in the app itself. So yeah, this looks very exciting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, totally. And I feel like I really want to release it one day, because I use it multiple times a day, just like you described, through Shortcuts or through I initialize or I what do you say? I run a shortcut through many different apps. I often use this on Mastodon. If you ever see me post anything on Mastodon, it has probably been through TextCorrect, at least for the past 2 months or so, because I feel like I've managed to tweak it enough that it corrects my mistakes, but it still keeps my personality. So I feel like I can justify using it on Mastodon, right? Where you want a sense of personality from the people that you follow, right? I feel like it kind of works well. And I use it multiple times a day. The only thing keeping me from releasing it is that there would be some ongoing costs because I would need to pay for the to use the OpenAPI, OpenAI API. And so I think this would need to be either have a high upfront cost that no one would want to use it, or it would need to be a subscription app. And I haven't made a subscription app yet, so that would be something new for me to tackle. And I don't know if, I'm up for it yet.
I mean, that would be something new, but at least you'd be trying it with StoreKit 2 instead of the original StoreKit. And I've heard that the new version is much nicer to work with there. So, you know, that's definitely something to help you out there, which is good. So I feel like this is the sort of app where, you know, some people will be like, well, can't I just input my own API key? And then they get a massive bill from OpenAI and get really cranky about. So I think they would be better off getting you to handle the subscription for them and enjoying the nicely polished app that comes out of it as a result.
Well, I think somebody's going to do this app, because there's just this explosion of these AI-based text-related apps. So I think you should do it because I think you're one of the best developers to make a good version of it that people would actually like to use. So many of them seem like people are just, you know, using Whisper or whatever and just dumping out these little apps without really a lot of consideration. So I'd love to see you release it, but it also just opens in my mind the idea that, you know, this is a whole different avenue of automation that's emerging right now. And people listening to this show, I think, should be keeping track of it. There's a lot of people that are either overly afraid of AI or overly are not cautious enough with it, you know, putting data into these engines that they wouldn't want to have out there. And I feel like, you know, this is an intelligent use of it. And that's what we should all be encouraging right now, is finding ways to use AI to make your life better, but being aware of what it can do and what it can't do. You know, like it can correct your text for you and give you a nice example. It probably can't do your pool party, you know, and we just got to find those limits, you know, and I would encourage you to pursue that.
Thanks so much. That's so kind of you.
You really are getting leaned on. You're really getting leaned on today, so I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm just going to say in advance, folks, don't pester Simon about TextCorrect, because if he has to spend all of your time, all of his time replying to Mastodon posts about, hey, I want this really cool app that you mentioned on Automators, we won't get it. Give him some development time. I'm sure we will see it at some point. And of course, you'll have to let us know if it does make it out to the App Store so we can talk about it on Automators and let everyone know when it's out, because, you know, this is the sort of tool that is just incredibly useful for people. And I feel like it's the small tools that make your life easier that are the ones that, you know, people kind of overlook a little bit. But then once they realize how useful it is, it becomes, you know, a linchpin of their workflow. And that is, you know, the sort of thing that I personally love. You know, I'm always looking for like the little thing that makes my life easier.
And that's really a theme today, honestly, is like small shortcuts-based automation tools, small AI-based automation tools. You know, you get a few of those in your life and they can make a difference. Mm-hmm. Well, Simon, I want to thank you for coming. If people are interested in what you're up to, where should they go?
Mastodon. They should follow me on Mastodon then, where I still haven't gotten used to read out loud a Mastodon username. I guess it's @SimonBS@mastodon.social. I guess that's the username. I mean, if you go to simonbs.dev in your browser, you'll find links to my social media profiles. And
we've got links to that in the show notes as well.
All right. Great. And thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure chatting, nerdy stuff with you. I love that.
Yeah. Well, we love what you're doing. We want to thank our sponsors today. That's our friends over at LinkedIn and Vitally. We are the Automators Podcast. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. You can find the forums at talk.automators.fm. If you are an Automators Max subscriber, the three of us are going to talk a little bit about things that we've been meaning to automate but haven't. It's actually, I'm really looking forward to this discussion. you can learn more about Automators Max over at relay.fm/automators. It's the ad-free extended version of the show. Help support the show, and we'd really appreciate it. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.